Well, you reached the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. This is D. Wills. I'm on the controls right now until we get the Game Changer, who will be joining us later on in the show. But you know this is Renegade Radio, and you know how we do it. We got a lot going on tonight, but we do have Phil T., the PhD. How are us people?
Hey, man, happy to be here. Want to thank our guest, Eric Hamilton from Michigan, calling in last week. Got that fantasy phase and craze fed for the time being. A lot of good feedback. Appreciate the feedback. Keep it coming, listeners. Yeah, looking forward to the show tonight, man. Looking forward to talking about this rookie of the year conversation, what's going on in Penn State. Talk about some underrated cats in basketball. I'm looking forward to it. Let's roll.
Well, you know, and the Penn State talk is obviously hitting all of the airways, and everyone has an opinion. And, you know, obviously we'll – I mean, I think that's a place where we definitely want to start. We'll just, you know, we'll kind of hold off on some other things until we have a chance to have the Game Changers join us some of our normal segments. But I think we were remiss if we didn't talk about what was happening at Penn State. And you know, and what I'd like to do is maybe take a little bit different angle about it, but I'd like to just get some general – I know, Phil T., you have you know, some strong, and we've been going texting back and forth positions on this. You know, I know you have a nephew that's playing college football, and all the conversations about college sports and the role that it plays in terms of its influence on university campuses and decisions, resources, a whole bunch of things. This story, in some ways, has many layers to it that have been part of the landscape of college sports discussions for a really strong period of time, particularly in the recent years. And all the layers kind of come together in the story in terms of how things were handled at Penn State as it relates to this alleged incident. So let me get a little bit of, I guess, maybe open it up and let you maybe provide a little bit of feelings of what you think about and how you kind of just seeing what's happening at Penn State. Are you there, Phil?
Yeah, it's a real interesting situation. It's a sad situation. It's one that angers many people, and rightfully so. For those not aware, one of Joe Paterno's assistant, who was his assistant for a good 30 years, I believe, that stopped coaching about 10 years ago. I think his name is Sandusky. He's a defensive coordinator there, and he's of sexually molesting young boys. There's been multiple cases, you know, and really that's all we know at this point. There's been some administrators at the university who have stepped down because the grand jury found them found evidence they may not have been truthful. So, like you mentioned, Yvonne, there's just so much information that we don't know, but the story just seems to be growing and growing just over the past 36 hours since it broke. You know, my perspective on it is, first and foremost, is we need more information. You know, there's been many people in the national media that have taken some really strong stances on this in terms of Joe Paterno needs to go, if he knew anything about it. You know, there were some reports that a graduate assistant had witnessed some stuff back in 2002, I believe, by my dates right, or 99, 102. You know, Paterno then went up to the chain of command, told the athletic director. A lot of people are crying out saying, well, he should have went to the police. And, you know, it's a real sad situation, assuming that even some of this stuff is true. you know, my perspective is a little bit different because, you know, as a young buddy psychologist, I'm thinking about everything that I know and have studied about predators, pedophiles. And, you know, what most of the research supports is that pedophiles typically don't go up to their boss and tell them that I'm a pedophile. So that just typically doesn't happen. Most pedophiles don't even tell their close friends, their relatives, you know, even their spouses in some situations of this illness that they have, you know, of molesting or whatever the situation is. You know, we can stretch this out to other addictions as well, you know, in terms of substance abuse, sex, whatever it is. And so from my standpoint, you know, I'm really, really leery about putting a lot of the blame on Paterno. Because if this guy, you know, if this stuff is true, and he's like most other pedophiles, even if he and Joe were best friends, which it sounds like they're really close, you know, and he was his boss, he'd be the last person to know typically. Especially somebody in such a public situation, you know, in terms of Sandusky. And so that's why I'm really concerned of, you know, why are we passing judgment so quick on Paterno? Now, I'll be the first one to say, hey, if evidence comes out that he clearly knew what was going on, yeah, he should be held accountable. But that's kind of my initial take. Where are you at with it?
Well, I think it's a couple of different things. You know, the one thing we can say, a lot of people have been referring to the grand jury testimony and the graphic nature of it. And I haven't had a chance to look at the testimony. But what I am most concerned about is the way in which due process played out. So part of it is there's a sense that they know about two incidents, whether it was alleged or not to the detail, but they knew there were about two incidents. One, I think, was in 98 and one in 2002. And what I am most concerned about is the way in which the process worked. And so it doesn't appear that they exhausted all the things that their power in terms of internally looking at this. In fact, we still don't know, you know, what, you know, you have to think about it. I mean, this is part of the conversation. I mean, Sandusky retired, you know, 99 at 55. There's a lot of smoke, and part of it is what was the motive not to go through the type of due process that you need to go through internally. There's a sense that they did not do all they could do internally to get to the bottom of it. So even though, you know, Sandusky is alleged to have done this, I'm not sure that they went as aggressively as you should probably go at it when you're trying to look at something like this. And it feels like, and this is the part where I want to get to, where I think, you know, one of the big questions is, in some ways, has higher education lost its way in terms of its sense of purpose and what it means? You know, they had this big thing about, you know, Miami back in the day about, are the inmates running the asylum, in a sense. And in some ways, you know, we look at the scrutiny that they put on athletes for just taking a little bit of money in a way that I'm not saying they should or should not. I'm not really getting into all that. But we have a situation. So we have a situation like this, and there's hardly anything. And that's part of what people talk about in terms of the hypocrisy of college athletics, in the sense that the same scrutiny doesn't happen for everyone else surrounding the sport in the same way it happens for the athletes. And I think that had this been an athlete, there probably been, there might have been a different level of scrutiny happening versus this being a coach, being somebody established. And there's a sense that there was more concern about the brand, which is Penn State, rather than really getting to the bottom of it where you have these young people who are put in positions where they shouldn't be put in. So that's the part that I'm trying to, and I'm all about, you know, due process. I think, you know, we are in a society because we have more than a 24-hour news cycle. I mean, when you add Facebook, Twitter, and all the different ways in which people communicate across the globe and how information can get there, we have a lot of information coming out. And I do think that we should allow it for it to play its course. But the other part about it that I'm concerned about is that I don't see, and this is the part that, this is where it's similar to Ohio State in a sense, that I don't see the same type of leadership from the president in terms of having a clear communication plan. It seems like they're scrambling. And when people are scrambling, when they're scrambling, you feel like if there's smoke, there's fire. When people do things in terms of just not even having the right kind of response to the community that you need to have, that I felt like they could have, you know, in a way that wouldn't put Joe Pa in a position where you were being accusing him of the doing, but at the same time acknowledging that this is something that you want to get to the bottom of, you don't even see that kind of communication plan coming out. So, you know, how they're doing their crisis management, all that stuff seems like they're scrambling. And I think that's the part that I think at the end of the day is going to be really a question on the larger end. You know, has the brand just taken away all the core of what we're supposed to be in terms of higher education? Has the brand of college athletics put its shield in front of the university brand? As someone who loves college sports, who really spends a lot of time around folks who do this, who work hard every day in athletic administration, coaches who work hard every day in doing this, have we got to the tipping point of college sports where we're making these type of decisions? You know, if it comes out that this is true, then this really is an indictment on higher education. One of our premier land-grants universities, where it is a place that's representing the state and the people were failed. And have we got to a point in higher education where college sports has such an impact on our lives, not just the coaches and the, but just we created this aura with the people in our state around these programs that it's like protect the brand by any means necessary. And I think that is, at the end of the day, what's going on. And particularly when we're talking about young people who don't have the ability to defend themselves, which is the ultimate test of a system. When we can't protect young people for whom the system should be there to protect, and we have people who are not making the right decisions around this, that's going to be problematic. So I do want due process to play out, but I think this has multiple layers. What I would probably look at, you know, Phil, maybe I want to ask you this, because I know you talked about, I mean, there's been a lot of conversation about, you know, and this is your background, you're doing a lot of, you know, training and research and looking at this, you've looked at this, and you talk about profiling, you know, pedophiles. Would you say his behavior in terms of even setting up an organization that allows him to have access to the most vulnerable young people, does that give you any sense of the pattern of behavior?
Yeah, right. I mean, when you look at the traditional profile, a lot of it lines up in terms of what's being reported. you know, in terms of somebody who's got influence, got power, you know, and like you mentioned, setting up an organization in which you have access to kids that may be a bit more vulnerable. Yeah, a lot of that lines up, but obviously I don't want to suggest that everyone in that profile, you know, should be suspected of these types of things, because that's certainly not the case. But again, you know, I take the stance that we need more information, but at the same time, it's not looking good right now in terms of what's being presented. I saw Matt Millen. He was on.
That was incredible.
He was on ESPN throughout this entire day, pretty much. And, you know, a few different occasions, he got pretty emotional talking about what's going on at Penn State. I mean, this is a guy who played in the NFL for years, was in management with the Lions, won Super Bowl rings. He was an All-American at Penn State. He played for Paterno in the, I don't know, it was late 70s, early 80s, probably in the 70s sometimes, I would imagine. Sandusky was his defensive coordinator. I mean, he even went as far as to say, hey, you know, I've had this guy in my home. You know, like Paterno's first statement that came out, if this is true, he had us all fooled. And this is pretty much what Millen said today. You know, and I couldn't help to be, you know, I thought his emotions were very authentic. I think ESPN certainly could capitalize on that in terms of having him on just about every show throughout the day. That's neither here nor there, but I felt a lot of empathy in terms of what Millen was saying. And, you know, I have to believe that a lot of former players and people that are familiar with Sandusky in the program are probably feeling very similar. But Millen also has some very strong feelings in terms of, hey, I'm a parent, I'm a grandparent. It sickens me of people who take advantage of kids who in large, are defenseless. So, I mean, this story, you know, honestly, I think we'll have even more to talk about next week. You know, I honestly hope this isn't true, but like you mentioned, Yvonne, where there's, you know, like typically when there's smoke, there's fire out there. And, you know, at this point, if things weren't handled the way they should have been handled, you know, people are going to lose their jobs and lose credibility. And in a paternal situation, you know, if it comes out that he didn't handle things the way that we as a society expect him to, there's going to be some cost there as well.
Well, talk a little bit about what do you think about the, you know, what they said about the, you know, the now wide receiver coach, graduate assistant walking in, having an eyewitness. I mean, think about that process. What are your feelings about what allegedly happened?
Well, I think it's a unique situation because, correct me if I'm wrong, Sandusky had already retired, or like he wasn't working for Penn State at that point. Is that correct?
No, he wasn't working for Penn State. So he had already retired. He was there. He had an office, and then he had a parking spot, what I believe.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I'm not a huge Paterno fan. I mean, I don't have anything against them, but I don't see this attachment that I have towards them. So this certainly isn't the reason that I continue to defend him. But at the same time, you got somebody who's not an employee, but yet you report this to your boss. I don't know, because the lines are just so blurred. You know, a lot of people are saying, well, he should have called the police. You know, and I get that side of the argument. this is a lot of layers out here, and, you know, what might happen, Devon, is we may not get answers for a long time because we already saw Sandusky, you know. He pretty much said, hey, my lawyers told me not to say anything, so you're not going to get much clarity from this guy. You know, Paterno, you know, Matt Dillon even said, hey, Paterno's the type of guy that I'm surprised he hasn't said anything yet, but I expect him to say something soon. But they canceled his press conference today. And I'd be surprised if we didn't hear anything from Paterno. It seems like his son, Paterno's son, has been putting stuff out there on Twitter, and he's like chopping up the bit to talk about it. But
they said he was about to have his own press conference. Because this is about legacy, right? So he's going to have his own press conference. Right now, his family is rallying about legacy. This is all about legacy. But what they don't know is that's already going out the door. Because public opinion, you know, perception is reality. And so right now, this, you know, they're trying to really, you know, protect his brand. You know, that's a strong brand, the Paterno brand. And so they're going to protect that to the end. You know, there's reports that he's going to have his own press conference set up for tomorrow.
Okay.
Well, I mean, yeah. So that right there, yeah, that throws another wrench into the game because he's not going to let, Paterno's not the kind of guy to let somebody else define his legacy. So if he's going to go down fighting, and that might be the Woody Hayes moment. Because all great coaches have an ego, and at certain points where you should be listening and you should be sitting back, you get in front of them well-schooled reporters asking the right questions, and something might come out not the way. You know, you could have one of those moments. You know, I'm thinking, the first thing I think about, like, what's this 30 for 30 going to look like? You know, I'm like, what's this 30 for 30 going to look like? This going to look crazy. Because he might have one of those moments tomorrow. He might have one of the moments tomorrow that we all remember. You're like, you were there when he said that.
Yeah.
Because ego plays a role.
That's right. Because you know Joe's going to say what's on Joe's mind. Okay? And, I mean, what are your thoughts on him still coaching at this age? You know,
well,
do you think
I thought he
could get him?
Well, I think that, I said long ago he should have been gone. I don't really believe in this. You get to leave on your own terms and all that stuff. Universe, like the athletes get what they get. Coaches, they're giving Joe everything they can give him. They give him more than any coach could ever dream of. If the university decides they ain't going another direction, when you were 70, at that point, you on a year-to-year contract. If the university said they want to go in another direction, that's on them. Everybody else should be giving them a punt. And it never works out, whether it's a player or it's a coach. When you let them begin to dictate the terms of your organization and where it's going, they never end the right way. And in some ways, if you think about it, that might have been the cause of this. Because at the time this happened, he should have been retired. So in some ways, the university allow for this stuff to happen if it happens. Because they were thinking about it back then to ask him to retire. And so, you know, I've never seen a situation when the player or a coach can dictate this and the organization does dictate it. And I'm all for players and people. I'm all for that. But this is a situation that we all felt like has long overdue. And don't get twisted with the 8-1 start. He's a figurehead. Other folks are really coaches. He probably doing a little bit of coaching. But at the end of the day, if you've been around these type of coaches and the hours they put in, it's some assistant coaches at Penn State that's making it happen.
Yeah. So this situation, man, we have a lot more to talk about this. I mean, perhaps even when Marcus gets on. But certainly next week.
I'm here, Cat Daddy.
Oh, okay.
Take it over, game changer.
You know, I snuck in the back door. back door.
I want winners.
Let's get it in.
Now, y'all have a real good conversation. I'm going to let y'all keep it rolling. I'm going to get settled in. But y'all do what y'all do.
Well, we doing this stuff real sports guy style. We all got things going on, covering our kids and everything else. You know, I'm swinging in to pick up my daughter from practice. This is how we do it. I want y'all to understand we do real stuff. We love this stuff. We're going to talk about it. You know, this thing, I still want to get deep into what does this say about higher education and what sports has. How much does it say how much we've been warped when the brand is even more important than 10-year-old kids? That's the part that I want to get real with.
Yeah, that's the part I want to talk about. That's the part I want to talk about. That's the part I want to sink my teeth into.
This feels like Richard Nixon.
The NCAA needs to become a true governing body. All right?
That's right.
You have institutions operating as independent entities, which is what we have right now, is institutions are basically doing whatever they want to do. They want to switch conferences. They want to be in a West Coast conference, but they're an East Coast team. They're making that happen. And so the NCAA needs to step in, and there needs to be some real oversight of these programs. Like Paterno, whether he knew or didn't know, that'll come clean in the wash, you know, as things start to come out. But, again, at no point should a university – be able to hush something like this. At no point should this person be allowed to continue to operate within the parameters of this university and the university not pay any real consequences. Because somebody saw something. Somebody knew something. And nobody necessarily acted. What do you do? How do you act? I'm not quite sure. But for this, there were reports that this cat showed up on the practice field with a kid. Like, are you for real? Did nobody think that was a little crazy? That's like you got a cousin that's addicted to crack, and a crack pipe fall out of his pocket while he had Thanksgiving dinner. Ain't nobody going to say nothing.
and Marcus,
you know he used to have a crack habit.
You know how close that these communities are. You know how much these folks know about each other.
That's the other piece of this is that, and you know this, Devon, being in a big-time college town, the media doesn't go in on these universities the way they should and the way the media polices pro teams and the way the media goes after pros. You know, again, other than Yahoo, ain't nobody really – And Joe Pye's lucky Yahoo never got a hold of this. You'd have known about this 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure if you ask Joe Pye about Yahoo today, he'd be like, what's a Yahoo? I bet they got a hold of the story. He didn't know what a Yahoo was. No, but in these college towns, the media doesn't dig into the university. They don't point out those contradictions because – they have to maintain a cordial relationship. And that's why something like this, that's why a Penn State can, and again, we don't know exactly all what happened, but as far as I'm concerned, there was some wrongdoing somewhere. Now, we don't know who did what, but somebody turned a blind eye to this, all right? Like I said, there were reports that this dude showed up to practice with a kid. Flag on the play. Somebody say something. Somebody do something. Somebody call somebody. So,
I mean,
you know, where's the oversight at some point?
And you're talking about a janitor? They said janitors saw it? I mean, when there's that much smoke, somebody burned a toe.
Right.
You can't have that. So, I mean, inappropriate. Something happened enough that people felt like they had to tell somebody. If you feel like you got to tell somebody, if you feel like you got to go talk to your supervisor about it, like somebody was saying on the air radio today, you know, this is the stuff you go talk to your supervisor about. This stuff you go talk to the police about.
Right.
I'm like, what's the sanction for this? See, this is where you talk about the hypocrisy of it. At the end of the day, there's no sanction for this.
Right.
Kid takes a lollipop. Kid gets an extra meal to eat. They'll try to shut you down. You allow all kinds of crazy behavior to happen in your facilities?
Right.
Or when people were coaching for you? The
and there's no responsibility? There's no culpability?
There's no responsibility. No.
To me, this situation just, it's, somebody's got to pay. Yeah, as a parent, somebody's got to pay. You know, as a concerned citizen, somebody's got to pay. Somebody's got to be held accountable outside of the man that was allowed, that did these things, for him to have access to these children, for him to have access to the facility to do these things and to maintain these clandestine activities that he was engaged in.
And the biggest thing, to not even have the president come out, even though due process has to play out, to not even have the president come out and say something like, you know, we know that this is a very serious situation. We are very concerned about the alleged victims. We are very concerned about the families. We are very concerned about everybody. We're going to do everything in our power to find out what happened as a public university.
See, just to me, if I'm going to say this is a nail in Joe Pye's coffin.
So does he coach Saturday?
Huh?
Does he coach Saturday?
Does he coach Saturday? Hell no, he don't coach Saturday. If he was a player, he wouldn't be playing on Saturday. If he was anything else, he wouldn't be participating on Saturday.
If he was a band instructor,
he wouldn't be participating on Saturday. If he was the janitor, if he was the hot dog boy, he wouldn't be participating on Saturday.
That's right. But there's
maybe this is where the NCAA does step in. Because think about the kids at Miami, Ja'Cory Harris. When, again, Yahoo's broke a story about all the stuff that was going on in the U right before the season started. What did the U do? They decided to sit this kid out. You know, and trust me, they had consulted the NCAA about that. I would be surprised if he coaches as well this weekend. I'd be very surprised.
They said, you know, it's senior weekend. You know,
and Joe Pye ain't gonna get to see it. If I'm up there, Joe Pye ain't gonna get to see this one. He gonna have to watch this one from the crib.
But as you know, in a small town like that, the sense of reality when it comes to that kind of situation, they see the world through totally different lenses and glasses. Even through Joe Paul's big glasses, they see it like 3-4 of his lenses. They see it, it's blurred. They see it through an entirely different, you know, lens. And so that's what we're seeing right now. And that's where this stuff is going to get deep. I mean, this is the stuff that we've been talking about for a while now, all coming home to roost in a real terrible way. And you know, and these young people get lost in the shuffle. You got a ninth person who stepped up. That's gonna be. I mean, like you said, it's a nail in the coffin. But damn, how many nails do you need?
Yeah, I mean, this situation needs to be handled. Something needs to be done. Whether you put them on a leave until due process takes place, there are things that the university can do, and there are things that the university should do, and there are things that maybe the NCAA should do and should have done in a situation like this. Something should be done. Somebody should be held accountable. And again, the NCAA needs to become something. Because right now, what are you there for? Well, what's your purpose? If not to to address a situation like this, what is your purpose? To catch kids getting money from agents? Is that really what this is? I mean, is that really all y'all there for? You know, if the NCAA doesn't step in and do something about this situation, to hell with them. That's what I say, straight up and down.
But, you know, they're powerless. The thing about it, these are all college presidents, university chancellors, and they are as powerless as anything. That's the crazy thing about it. It's like, it's truly, in some ways, inmates are running the asylum, but the inmates aren't the students, student athletes. And so this is something that, you know, they don't have much. In some ways, I think the place that probably has more power to NCAA to do something about this might be the Big Ten. They might be the last sanction down on it. But I don't think it's that place. I mean, this is something that really your board of trustees, a board of regents, or president, somebody should be stepping in like, hold it. And if the president can't do it, somebody on the regents should be stepping in and say, look, you know, or the governor or somebody should be putting political pressure. But somebody, it needs to be somebody right there on that campus. But right now, it doesn't seem like anyone can step up. But I know, Phil, you've been saying due process. So are we going too far?
I think so. I mean, trust me, I share a lot of the feelings that you guys have. But again, I'm a big due process type of person. I think we need to at least hear what Joe has to say. But in the court of public opinion, which, you know, I mean, this is why we have these kind of shows, okay? It's not looking good. It's not looking good. Actually, it's looking bad, okay? Let's just go on and say what it is. It's looking bad. It's looking real bad. But Paterno's going to have a press conference tomorrow. Is that what you said, Devon?
I think we lost D.
I'm looking at my phone. But
hold on. D. Wills.
Man, out here trying to battle with these with all these parents to pick up my daughter. But I must say something because I dropped on the call. But I miss Phil T's good point. So hopefully you can help me bring me back and recap.
I would just ask you, Paterno's going to have a press conference tomorrow, that you heard?
Well, he allegedly, that's what they're saying, is that he might have his own press conference. And if he does, that means that things are breaking down internally. If he's having his own press conference, then he's getting signals from somebody, which, you know, a guy like that knows exactly what's going on with the regents. He's got enough people on the inside who's getting information back to him. So if he holds a press conference tomorrow, that means that he's lost the support of the regents. Enough of them that they're going to make a move here soon, and that his family's made a decision that the legacy is important and they're going to take over what's going to happen with his legacy and brand. So if he has that press conference, then that means all the controls internally have slipped. He doesn't trust them. He feels like they're going to make him. He saw what happened to Trussell. Who in the world thought Trussell was going to be gone? I'm like, Trussell's so damn powerful. Ain't no way in the world he's going to be out of there. Next thing we know, Trussell's like at the press conference saying goodbye. So,
right.
And that was, huh?
Gordon Gee didn't think he was going to be leaving.
No, none of them. He had all the, and Gordon Gee is the most powerful guy in higher education. Bar none. So if Gordon Gee can't protect you, then you know he knows what's going on. So I think, you know, right now, he's at a point right now where if he has that press conference, you can tell the end is close. And he knows it. He's taking control of his legacy. The problem is you don't know what Joe Parr going to say when he get out in front of everybody. And that's what you got to – he might have his moment. That's why I said that's the 30 for 30 moment. You know, That's the one that's going to be on film. You know, yeah. That's the moment, and you got to be nervous about that.
Yeah, this is a very serious topic, but, yeah, let's bring in some humor with this. I don't know if you all have seen some of Joe Pa's press conferences over the last couple of years, but, I mean, he kind of started to get like your grandparents who were in their 80s. Kind of, you know, not as focused, loses track, starts telling stories, and starts another story in the middle of another story. I mean, this could get away from him, where it could be obvious that, you know what, you may need to step away just because you're 80-some years old. You need to maybe step away. Yeah.
I'm gonna go ahead and give my dope line for tonight. I had a dope line lined up related to this particular topic, and it was directly related to the possibility of Joe Pa getting up in front of people and trying to address this. and it was Black Thought on Talib Kweli's Gorilla Monsoon rap. Black Thought said, "MCs is spitting nails into their own coffins." That's what would happen when Joe Pa gets up in front of the microphone and says anything about this issue. Brother better get a spokesperson. He better get a translator and an ultra key.
And that right there lies the problem, because when people just start eating whatever you say, no matter what, all the folks around you, all the handlers, we can think about it from entertainment world to whatever, it's always, when you don't have that guy who can tell you full of stuff around you, those are often the most balanced entertainers, most balanced people. You can tell they got people around them who are telling them what they need to hear rather than what they want to hear, right?
Right.
And when you have those kind of folks around you, Joe Pa got a whole bunch of people around him who was feeding the leg. That's why he's there at 83. Everybody's drinking the Kool-Aid. And so, yeah, these are the moments that they end up in, because everybody in their mind know he shouldn't go up there, but everybody's afraid to tell him not to do it. And he ain't got one person around here. You know, look, man, everybody else around here talking this junk, you need to sit your old butt down. I know you can yell at me right now. We don't carry you out kicking and screaming. You're not getting in front of that camera. But he don't have anybody around him who's going to tell him that. He's going to have one of them 30 for 30 moments. I can feel it. I can feel it, man. I can feel it coming. Because he's jumping a bit too much to get up there, and they're going to tie him into a – and he can't – his ego is not going to let him try and not answer the question.
Right.
So, you know, he's not going to allow people to challenge him. It's like one of the moments. You ever watch Law and Order? When the person on the stand gets so mad, and Jeff McCoy get him with that moment, they can tell, like, I could have said that. You remember? That's the kind of moment I'm afraid of.
You can't handle the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You can't handle the truth. You know, that's one of the moments. That's some Oscar performing moments. So that's what I'm scared of. At the end of the day, this is about kids and stuff. That's how Joe got to go out, and that's how he got to go out. But his ego is not going to let him not have control of the situation. That's what makes him great, is that he's always been in control.
It puts me in the mind of a Bobby Knight. You know, that was kind of the demise of Bobby. Bobby can never bite his tongue. He had to say what needed to be said in his opinion.
He's like, yeah, I threw the chair. You know, it's just like, okay, Bobby, you know, I hit the kid, I bumped him, the kid was saying something crazy. You know, you just can't, you know, that's the Bobby Knight. You're right, that's Bobby Knight. And so, you know, he's like, I told my boss, but he's not going to be able to see the moral side of his responsibility. You know, yeah, that's your boy, but you should have done more than told your boss. If it's about honor, what's they're saying, honor before whatever, you know, whatever they say at Penn State, that should have been leading you. And you would have gone at this with the vigor you would have gone after with one of your players. And so that's what's going, you know, you can't just say you told your boss and then let the cat have an office at the facility and a car and still bring kids by. You know, you can tell the body language. You can tell somebody knew something, man. It's too close-knit a community for somebody to know something. And then for the wide receiver coach who was the GA to be on your staff, they all, you know, everybody know. And he's the one. He's still on your staff. Something went down, you know. But hey, Rome falls someday.
Right. I'm with Phil on this one. I believe in due process, but in the end, I believe somebody other than Sandusky knew something about what was going on, and somebody co-signed. Again, he's using facilities that you or I can't just walk into. I just can't walk up into Penn State and you know, be doing whatever I want to do up in there. So he had clearance of some sort. He had pull. He had plug. He had access. He had an in of some sort to be able to access the facilities and do the things that he felt he needed to do, whatever it was. Somebody knew about that. Somebody above him knew about that. Somebody above him turned a blind eye. Whether it was Joe Pa or somebody else under Joe Pa, again, with these college coaches, just off of the way things are and the makeup that you have to have, and Devon, I think you're talking about this when you talk about how most of these guys are insane micromanagers, which is why they're good at what they do. Because they infuse themselves into every little bitty detail of their program. And so, again, due process, you know, whatever's there is going to come clean in the wash. But to me, this is a travesty. And the NCAA, the Big Ten, somebody above, beyond Penn State needs to step in and hit them with the 4x4.
and you know, and I wonder, I mean, we've had some pretty high profile kind of going out kind of processes in terms of, you know, what happened at Florida State and just this whole conversation. I think if anything about this is true and where it is right now, you're not going to see, my question, are you going to see future universities handle legends with kid gloves like this in the future? I mean, given some of the stuff we've seen even recent years with just how some of the stuff has worked out and just how comfortable it's been, even when it hasn't been scandal. But are you going to see university presidents and folks handling folks with kid gloves here in the future? I mean, what do you think about that? Do you see a change given how some of these folks are seeing what's happening?
I think there needs to be a change. I think if I'm a university president or somebody of that nature who's making these kind of decisions, or AD or athletic director, eventually, you know, as my coach starts to creep up towards 70, you know, he gets about 64, 65, normal people retirement age, he and I are going to sit down and say, what's your exit plan? And you need to have an exit plan. The max I'm giving you is 5 years.
That's right.
So what's your plan of exiting this program at that time? I love you, appreciate everything you've done, but we're not going to have you on the sidelines at 70, bro.
You know, I'm right there with you, Marcus. I think it's going to be less of an issue than it was, say, a generation ago, because just, you know, just like in basketball and other sports, with free agency, you're not seeing teams of players in the same uniform like we did last generation. I mean, think about it now. We can only name one, Kobe Bryant, for the most part. You know, that leads me to the next question. Who else is left that has this kind of clout? The only guy I can really think of is Coach K at Duke. And I think this situation is going to take care of itself because it's a dying breed of these kind of institutions that we have
as a coach. You know, Bobby Bowden's gone. Paterno's looking like he's about to exit. You know, what are the guys you guys see out there that we could possibly be having this conversation about 5 or 10 years from now in terms of this guy needs to let it go?
Well, I mean,
yeah,
two guys.
I can see Saban.
I was going to say Saban, the Mad Hatter in LSU if he wins a couple more national championships. You know, particularly in SEC country, sometimes if they start thinking about building statues of you, folks
right.
get real crazy.
Right.
I mean, see something like that.
Muschamp out in, and he's just getting started, but Muschamp out in Florida, if he's winning there, that's a job you don't leave. You know, I think you have to look at places, guys who can have success and are at places where you don't leave that job. Mac Brown, he ain't going nowhere. Mac Brown going to retire in Texas. You can't get a better job in Texas. You know, all he can do is make a lateral move from Texas. So I think those are the places where you see coaches hang around for a while. Even a guy like Brett Bielema, you know, I could see him staying in Madison, riding off into the sunset, because I think for a guy like him, I don't know if he's going to get a better job than what he has at a place like Wisconsin.
Yeah, I can say if Brett would have stayed undefeated and, you know, if there had been a national championship game or a hunt, yeah, that's the kind of job, you know, you win a national championship or, you know, you compete in one, you could be there for a long time. So I think there are some jobs, but I think, you know, depending on this power to win, you know, and how this influenced the win, people change on you big time these days, how competitive things have become, you know, I think that becomes a part of the equation.
Well, I think the precedent has been set as well. I mean, look at what happened with Trussell at Ohio State. You know, we were having this conversation a year ago, we would have thrown in Trussell in this conversation. In terms
right.
of coaches that we just talked about. And compared to Trussell, I mean, what Trussell was accused of doing is like a 1 on a scale of 1 to 100, where Joe Pa's like at 100. Okay? So
that's right.
I think there's been a precedent that, yeah, you can be this idol. Yeah, we'll build statues. You know, yeah, we'll have commercials about your sweater vest. But you mess up, you should have known. You should have known, okay, the janitor was doing something, you should have known. You know, these kids that you see, that you literally talk to once or twice a week, in an auditorium with 100 other players, they're taking money, you should have known. And so I think the precedent has been set that these coaches are no longer untouchable. I mean, think about Woody Hayes 30 years ago, however long ago it was, that he had this sense of privilege. An entitlement, and this joker slugged a player running down the sideline. I mean, this is how untouchable this guy thought he was. Think of all the stories we heard of Lou Holtz doing, you know, in terms of abusing players. And what Bobby Knight did was nothing compared to what Lou Holtz did on national TV in terms of yanking face masks. Okay? I just think that based on what's happened, you know, just over the last 2 or 3 years, that these coaches are no longer untouchable. And we as a society have forced universities to make these guys more accountable and not let them get away with things, especially when it comes to life. And I think the further we get from 2011, the tougher it's going to be to keep these kind of scandals underground for 9 years. You know, like the game changer said, you got Yahoo Sports out there, but I mean, you got all these different media ways. I mean, anybody with a camera phone can report stuff nowadays. So, you know, I don't think that we're going to have an issue of getting rid of coaches in the future that do this kind of stuff. I believe the precedent has been set that they got to go. They got to go, and they got to go fast.
Yeah, And, you know, I think you're right. I think, you know, as long as you're winning the right way and you're doing the things in a way that the university wants you to, you're going to be all right. But you go out there and you put the you jeopardize, again, you jeopardize the brand. Because I think that's what, I think ultimately, again, these schools are brands. And what Trestle did jeopardized the brand. Whatever is going on at Penn State has jeopardized the brand. And once you jeopardize the brand, you jeopardize the livelihood of the university. And once you do that, anybody can be got.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? At that point, it doesn't matter who you are. You're not bigger than the brand. And that's why you see a Trestle get sent up the river. And again, depending on how this all plays out, you can see a Paterno being shown the door. So, I mean, this is all a real sticky situation, and it'll all come clean in the wash. It's a lot of layers to it.
Well, I think we haven't heard from the faculty. So that's another thing that we have to think about. I mean, I wonder where the faculty play on this as well. And we haven't heard from them.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of pieces that still have to weigh in on how they feel about this, about the particular situation. Penn State's standing knee deep in it. And it's their own fault. You know, I ain't going to give you no towel to wipe yourself off. I ain't going to let you use my hose to hold yourself down. You stepped in it. You just got to walk around with that on your shoe.
Ooh, he said, with that on your shoe.
I mean, yeah, this is way out there stuff. And it just seems to continue to get, the rabbit hole seems to get deeper and deeper by the moment. You know, the trustees is meeting about it. Everybody's meeting about it. People want Joe Potter to say something. I do take him off the sidelines on Saturday. Because it's becoming a fiasco. You know, it's all becoming a fiasco. So, we got Ray on the line. Ray, you out there, man?
I'm out here.
Where you stand on this whole Paterno thing?
Where you stand on this whole
Penn State situation?
Well, I agree with you. They pulled Joe off. You know, until they can get this all straightened out, this is too hot of an issue to you know, just to stand by and let it sit there. You know, I think there's going to be some serious implications for Joe if it's found that he looked the other way.
Oh, absolutely. There's absolutely going to be some. Yeah, and I really do hope that Joe Pye did not look the other way on this one. I really do hope so, because, again, if he did and it comes out, wrap it up.
And that's your legacy. Unfortunately, that becomes your legacy. You know, for all the hoopla and everything. That's scary, but it also bodes with the idea that that maybe Joe is too old to be out there. You know, how old is Joe? 107? 108? You know, how effective is he really, Joe, he was done coaching in the 70s,
Yeah, always remind me of that scene in Coming to America. He said,
yeah,
Joe Louis fought Rocky Marciano, was 157 years old. Oh man. So, we're gonna, as we always do on this show, we gonna keep an eye on this issue, and we gonna fill y'all in on it as it continues to develop, as we continue to dig into it, and as the media and as more comes out. This story is in its infancy as far as where it will go and where it will be within the next couple of days, let alone next week when we catch up with you all again. So keep it on your radar. Keep an eye on the situation, because there could be some huge ramifications for a flagship university in the Big Ten and one of the bigger brands in NCAA football. So we're going to keep an eye on it. Now, I was absent for the first little bit of the show, so I want to check in with the guys. What ground did we cover? Is that the first topic that we've gotten to thus far?
That was the first topic.
All right. Okay. So I'm let the we're going to go Wildcat. I'm going to flank out to receiver, and we're going to in the huddle we're going to figure out what we're going to run next. So do we want to go with our five on the black hand side, or do we want to go with our funky editorial topic?
I like the funky editorial topic.
But then let's do it. Let's do it. All right. So for this week's funky editorial, we exchange texts. We probably exchange like 100 texts a week in between. We all got unlimited texting, I assume. Otherwise, this whole thing gets real expensive. We probably exchange like 100 texts throughout the week. We're all sitting down watching different sporting events and texting each other jokes and insights and things. And during this week, Phil T hit me with a text and suggested that we touch on this topic on the show this week. And the topic was, he was reflecting on Dr. J and discussing how during his day, Doc was the man. Doc was the icon of the NBA. He was the face of the league. And somewhere along the line, of course, Jordan had something to do with that. Kobe, LeBron, Shaq, all those guys have had something to do with the fact that now we don't see Doc. At least I know my generation, I think Phil and I are of the same generation. We don't see Doc the same way I think, maybe Ray's generation and Devon's generation do, because they actually saw Doc in his heyday. I didn't get to see that. And so I know Doc is a great. But I think nowadays, when we talk about up-and-coming greats, a LeBron James, a Kobe Bryant, and Kevin Durant, we go immediately to the Jordan comparison, and we don't even think about those comparisons to guys like a Dr. J, who was Jordan before Jordan. So we kind of cheat Doc in that way. So what we're going to do right now in this segment is we're going to highlight some guys who, from the past, and even some current players who we think will be viewed this way in the future, who are or were icons during their era and very significant players during their era. But today they're just kind of seen as great. Like, nobody's shortchanging their career. Nobody's saying that they weren't great. Nobody's saying that they're not Hall of Famers. But they're not viewed in the class that they were viewed in when they played. I'm going to let PhD start off this conversation because he has some real good guys. So why don't you go ahead and jump into a PhD?
Yeah, so my first guy was Dr. J, and you covered that one really nicely. The only thing I would add with Dr. J is, I'm fortunate to have siblings that are much older than me, 10, 15, almost 20 years older than me. And so my brother, he always points out that Dr. J was the man. I mean, I remember being a couple of years old having this, my brother having this life-size poster, okay, the old 5.5-foot-tall posters on the door, okay, the door posters. And you had Dr. J with his Converse on and his fro and his knee brace. I mean, this is what it was. This was before the internet. This was before, the ton of commercials. This is when, sneaker companies were called sneaker companies and not shoe companies.
okay? And Dr. J was a superstar. So other guys I thought of was Frank Robinson in baseball. My dad will tell you how good Frank Robinson is. My dad's almost 70 years old, okay? But Frank Robinson hit near 300 in his career. When he retired, he was fourth all-time in home runs with 586. This guy had over 1,800 RBIs. And for some reason, we just don't look at him in the same way that we even look at past greats of his era. So, you know, the Hank Aarons of the world, the Willie Mays, we don't look at Frank Robinson the same way. And, you know, my question to Marcus, and I can't get to the rest of the fellows, is why is that? You know, what has happened that we don't look at guys like Dr. J or Frank Robinson the way that we look, that those looked at them of their generation?
You know, I think part of it is, I think part of it is, I think we always, with every generation, there's this view that the players are more athletic, they bring more skill to the game in a way. And I think almost in some ways, baseball might be that game that's probably been the most consistent over time, even with the change in athleticism. So I think that argument, comparing eras, I think has probably been a little bit more consistent sometimes, you know, other than the steroid era in baseball, particularly for basketball, and I would say football sometimes. It's been viewed as how, you know, athletes have gotten better in size and speed, but it doesn't necessarily say that that's all to being great in terms of how people actually played the game. And I would say that, you know, the 80s were, in the type of basketball and the level of athleticism, in some ways could rival even some of the things that we saw today, but you couldn't get young people to see that. I mean, one of mine I had was Moses Malone. And when you look at Malone, I mean, I sat down, because he kind of came to me, I was like, when I saw this, I was like, you know, what about Malone? And when you look at Malone, Malone is one of three players who scored 20 points and 10 rebounds on four different teams. I knew he had dominated the rebounding title, but he was the first player in NBA history to earn five consecutive rebounding titles from 80 to 84. He only second to Karl Malone with free throws made, free throws attempted. You know, seventh all-time NBA career point. I mean, Malone, anybody who saw Malone play, all you saw was sweat. You knew you could almost lock up 20 points, 15 rebounds. And when he did the 4-4-4, because I was a Philly fan, and when they got Malone, I almost cried. I got a lot of love for Doc. I think Doc was even underrated, I think, even at that time sometimes when he was making the run. I mean, Malone is someone you hardly ever hear mentioned when you're talking about greatest centers. But I would put him up against any of the centers. If I started to see, I'll put Malone up against any of those centers. But he's one that if you talk to young people today, it's like you need to check a YouTube on him. So he's another example of it.
First-time
All-Star.
You know, go ahead.
I was going to say I described Moses Malone to my young nephew as, think of Dennis Rodman in terms of the knack he had to rebound, okay? Think of Dennis Rodman with a polished low-post game.
Yeah, the best to describe it.
Yeah, that's spot on appropriate.
I mean, the list from Malone goes on. I'm actually looking at this list, and he's got the highest number of offensive rebounds since the NBA started tracking offensive defensive rebounds.
but keep in mind that Moses Malone wasn't in the NBA for his whole career.
No, he wasn't. Right. He started the ABA.
That's right. And then the same thing with Doc.
Yep.
You know that is a generational thing, you know, because you know I ain't even gonna tell you how old I am, but I got more gray hair on my body than most. And I will tell you, you know, it's all about evolution, and it's all about where the game of basketball is today. You know, when you start talking about Dr. J, you know, I can tell you that Dr. J was an evolution of Connie Hawkins. If you ever get a chance to go back and look at old film and watch what Connie Hawkins used to do to people, you could see where, you know, where Dr. J took it to another level. When you got to grow up and watch Michael Jordan, you really got a chance to see the evolution of what Dr. J did, because now you have a guy, you know, that can take you to the cup or just beat you outside. Doc never had he never had the need to have that jump shot. You know, the team sport of basketball at that time, and when he was there, you know, wasn't necessary for him to shoot that outside shot. They had guys on the team that were going to take those shots. You know, and that's, you know, it's kind of like comparing boxers. When you look at a guy like Ali, you know, and wonder what he would have done against a Mike Tyson, you know, if you've seen enough boxing, you realize that, you know, given the nutrition and the training and all of the things that Mike Tyson got to grow up with, you'd realize that Ali would have had those same opportunities. He would have knocked Mike Tyson's ass out. You know, we've talked about this before. I know Dee and I have talked about it before. And the same thing holds true for these athletes today. You know, when you look at an athlete like Wilt Chamberlain, and you say, he was a foot taller than everybody, that doesn't negate, you know, what an athlete he truly was. You know, he was a decathlete at Kansas. I mean, he truly was an athlete. He wasn't just a foot taller than everybody else. He was probably a half a step faster than anybody ever seen in that size. And he just had great skills. He was a poor free throw shooter. But, you know, when you're scoring 100 points a game, you can't hardly knock a guy because he can't stand back 15 feet. You know? So I mean, it's all about the evolution. You know, if you look at what LeBron James is doing and what some of these young cats are doing, you know, it may seem like it's better, but I can tell you that if Dr. J had to have a jump shot like Jordan had to have, because, you know, or could afford to have, you know, he would have had it. He would have gone to the gym and he would have had it. It wasn't as though he couldn't do it. It wasn't necessary for his game. You know, if you remember, you know, and that's what it used to drive me nuts, you know, having grown up in the era of the old Lakers teams and the old Celtics teams, you know, to watch a team like the Bulls with three guys, you know, running the table on folks, because, you know, if that would have been 5 or 6 years before with the way that the team structures were, I don't think that they would have been, you know, as thought of as the greatest team ever or what have you. Yeah, the biggest statistic for me and Dr. J were those Philadelphia 76ers, because for a time, they were like the most prolific team in sports. And I'm talking about, you know, a winning percentage that you know, the Oakland Raiders used to be have the highest winning percentage for a team. But the Sixers had a higher winning percentage than they did. So, I mean, the Bulls might have the all-time, you know, I think the Bulls have the all-time record for most wins in a season. But if you look back at the next five or six places, and I'm thinking that Philadelphia might have four or five of those places.
Wow. The thing that blows me away with Doc is that Doc averaged 32 points and 20 rebounds 2 years in college at UMass.
Sure. Sure. And I can remember, them, Buck Williams, when he was in college, and how they were comparing him to Doc. You know,
they compared Buck Williams to Doc?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Back in the day, they did.
PCP is a hell of a drug.
We compared Harold Miner to Jordan. We can't talk.
That's true. That's true.
I thought they was crazy when they were doing that. When they were comparing Harold Miner to Jordan, I said, somebody drinking some of that purple stuff.
You know, I had to concede a few, you know, I had to concede years ago that Jordan may be, you know, the best all-time player that I've ever seen. But I can't concede that, you know, had Doc had a need to have that jump shot, you know, he would have had it. He would have had it. I mean, it's all about the game and it's all about the skills. And when you
here's another piece I think that plays into it. And I think it's the fact that, you know, if Dr. J played today, I think we view him differently, not just based upon his actual skill set, but we see Doc highlights every night.
Sure.
You know, every time Doc played, we'd be watching SportsCenter just to see Doc, what Doc did, the same way we do with LeBron, the same way we do with D-Wade and Blake Griffin and guys like that. I think that guys like Doc, guys today benefit from the media just as much as the media kind of digs into these dudes a little too hard. They benefit from it because it raises their profile. And I think that's why we view Mike the way we view Mike. And it's hard for these guys to surpass Mike because Mike came in at the perfect era to be a superstar, iconic athlete because the media wasn't as voracious, but at the same time, it was enough media to be everywhere.
Yeah, I agree with Marcus. That.
The other thing, though, is that Mike was a part of that evolution. Mike took what you know, and expanded upon. That's why when you think about guys, you know, when you think about the next best, you forget about those players that were great in their own right, but because they weren't as good as their predecessor, you know. Like when you look at a guy like Clyde Drexler, and you could make some comparisons with Clyde Drexler and Dr. J. They had about the same kind of game. But you don't hear people talking about Clyde the same way you hear him talking about Doc. Dominic Wilkins was very similar.
He was on my list. Dominic was on my list.
You know, and so because they came after and they didn't do better, you'll always remember them as, you know, being almost as good. You know, they had some of the skill set, but they just weren't as good as Doc because they tried to emulate Doc. You know, they tried to play that game. And they did and to be honest with you, they did a hell of a job. They were great players in their own right, but they didn't raise the bar. Michael Jordan raised the bar. And that's something that hasn't happened since. You know, Kobe is a great player. He has not raised the bar. LeBron is a great player. He just has not raised the bar. And so until somebody comes along and puts together some championships and has an outside jump shot and can beat you off the dribble, and I don't know what it's going to take because, you know, really Mike really did do it all. You know, he, for all of his offensive, you know, attributes, he was one of the greatest defensive NBA players you'll ever see as well. So I don't know what it's going to take, but you're going to have to raise that bar.
And when we talk about, I want to make sure, because I know we got some names out here. I know you got other names. The other name I want to put out here, because basketball is a sport where I think it's, but there's some other, but I have to say George Gervin. I don't think young people understand how good George Gervin was. I mean, in terms of just highlights, in terms of scoring, in terms of, Everybody who grew up in my era, if you didn't have that Iceman poster with his leg with his hand on them two balls, I mean, Gervin was the man, and everybody was in the park trying to be Gervin. I mean, when you think about the fact that he averaged 26 points, I was trying to figure over everybody. But
I'll tell you what, man, some old school cats and single-handedly lost me a pickup game or two trying to finger roll all the damn time.
But you could, but you had other, you know, you could say the same thing. You know, there was cats in the NBA that I used to watch and just go, wow, you know. Bernard King used to just have so much talent, it just scared you, you know. Andrew Tomey, on any given night, would cripple opponents. They just had no answer for him, you know. And your fella up in Detroit, he was a little microwave.
Oh, Vinny Johnson.
Vinny Johnson.
Yeah, you know, cats like that, because they you know, by the time you heard of them, they were on their way out because they never, you know, put up that, they never forwarded that evolution. They were just great ball players.
Now, one guy who I think did contribute to that evolution, but I think everything that happened after his career, really, a guy that was on my list was Zeke.
I saw your list. I'm with you.
When Isaiah was playing, he was a fierce competitor. He could dish the ball. He could score the ball. He may have been one of those. He may have been the prototype for the scoring guard who could still dish the rock. He was that.
Sure.
He took the game to a different. He picked up where Tiny Archibald left off, and took it to a new level. And
sure.
Then
he,
everything Zeke did after he played diminished everything he did when he was playing.
That's right.
Well, I used to look at Isaiah Thomas as a throwback. You know, I thought he was more, you know, he was
in the
Robinson.
Fags.
Oscar Robinson mode.
What you say, Phil?
I said Isaiah, man, is kind of getting in that OJ category.
What are they laughing about? There's nothing funny about basketball.
You're right, because you know people. You're right when you say that, because people know, they look at more about the sensationalism of your post sports life. Because OJ is another one, is one of the greatest running backs ever. That they don't think about him as just being one of the greatest running backs ever. Like, you shouldn't have a top five or somewhere where OJ, you couldn't have a top five, OJ wasn't on the list. People would argue in the barbershop on you if you had a top five.
Right,
any
you shouldn't be able to have a top five without Zeke. But I
you
guarantee
can.
You asked
no.
about top five point guards. You asked about top five point guards, and I guarantee Zeke, in most cats' lists, Zeke will get left out.
Yeah.
They will name a lot of guys before they get to Zeke, and they may throw him
in
at the end.
And I think that goes back to that Clyde Drexler thing, because the evolution for point guards was Magic Johnson. And until you get that guy that's 6'8" and can dish that ball and run a team like he did, you'll always think of him as the prototype. Where before,
yeah, but I think Zeke was the greatest little man. I think Zeke was the prototype little guy.
Okay.
He's the guy that Chris Paul is taking what Zeke did to the next level. Derrick Rose, those guys are taking what Zeke did to the next level. But Zeke was that photo. Like, Magic was something different. Magic and another one of the guys who I think is going to be viewed like this in the future is KG. KG and Magic are different. Where KG is 7 feet tall, he came in out of high school, did all this other amazing stuff, but then also had 6 years where he got exited out in the first round of the playoffs. And then when he finally does get to a team where he's winning, he basically has 1 year where he's playing at the level that we're accustomed to seeing, and then his play begins to taper off because of injuries and other things like that.
Sure.
I think you take guys like KG and Magic, who are anomalies and amazing, because they had a skill set and a body size that was just irregular, you know, and guys
right.
like Dirk and LeBron, who were just like, yeah. You ain't supposed to do that at that big. But Zeke was that little guy. He should be, you know, when you're talking about great scores under 6 feet and under, or 6'5 and under, Zeke has to be at the top of your list. He also has to be at the top of your list for greatest point guard.
And when you talk about the fact that his scoring suffered because he wanted to win championships. Because prior to that run, Zeke was up in the mid-20s. Wasn't he? in terms of scoring. So, I mean,
again,
during the early part of his career, he was one of the most feared cats to face night in, night out throughout most of his career. And in big games, we talk about big game clutch shots in the 80s, Zeke made more big game shots than you could than you can recall in big games. And so, yeah, I think a lot of that gets lost because of all this post, you know, running the continental basketball and the Knicks and all that stuff, threw all this stuff out there, going down to Florida International. You know, now he looks like Kim Kardashian.
But I think again that bodes the same argument I would make for Doc Rivers. Had Zeke not been on the team with Joe Dumars, he would have scored more points because he would have had to. If that would have been his role, he would have done it. He had the skill set, and he could have done it. So I mean, when you look at how these players are compared, I mean, if you really wanted to look at a statistic to say that Michael Jordan might not be the best, you know, look at his shooting percentage. Look at the fact that, you know, he shot a hell of a lot of shots. You know, it shouldn't surprise you that he scored as much as he did if you took a look at how many shots he took. You know, but that was the role he had to play on that team, you know, given that the talent was, in my opinion, diluted amongst so many other teams, that was the role he had to play. Now, if Doc had to shoot that many shots, he would have scored like that. You know, if Isaiah didn't have Dumars up in Detroit, you know, he would have scored more points. He would have had to shot more. So, I mean, it's just, not only has the players and the skill sets, you know, been uplifted, it's the fact that the game is just a lot different. You know, nobody would have lasted, I don't believe, in the triangle, you know, back in the day. You know, they would have wore your ass out.
Now, Marcus, you had a football player on here. Throw him out here.
I had Fran Tarkenton. Now, I never saw Fran Tarkenton play, but I've heard stories of how good Fran Tarkenton was. And I looked him up. And when this man retired, he was the all-time leader in NFL history in pass attempts, completions, yardage, and touchdowns, plus rush yards by quarterback, and wins by starting quarterback. So, but at the same time, anytime you hear the talking heads on ESPN or, you know, you listen to the radio, you never hear Fran Tarkenton brought up when you're talking about great quarterbacks. He was a league MVP, 9-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro. You never hear people say, Marino, and then your Fran Tarkenton and Joe Montana, Steve Young. You never hear that. You never hear Fran Tarkenton brought up.
Where's Dan Fouts on that list? You know, where's Warren Moon? If you want to keep your name in people's mouths, you've got to win championships.
I think you just hit the point. Someone was saying this on the air, and I love at some point we should do a segment about, you know, kind of putting our ear to the streets, and maybe we could do clips of some of these other shows that are talking about me. That'd be interesting because one of the conversations they had were about Jay Billis was saying, we do a really good job of counting. I don't know if y'all heard that, like when he's talking about how we pair people. Like, we've got to a point where we really count. If you haven't won a championship, then you don't count. That greatness is about necessarily winning championships all the time, that we dismiss these coaches who are great coaches because they never won a championship. And so
right.
I just hit your point that, that because, you know, Trent Dilfer wins a championship, all of a sudden he runs up the list. You know, but a guy like Tarkenton, loses 3-4 Super Bowls? What was it? How many did he play with? I don't know if he was in all of them.
I think at least three.
And so, you know, he was a combination of doing what we see Vic doing. He was the mad scrambler. It was early in my life, but I had a chance to watch him. You know, this cat was always winning, always going. He had great defenses, but this cat would make a play at any time. But you don't hear him because he didn't win those Super Bowls. He was in them against some great teams, but he didn't win. And so we do a good job of counting.
Yeah, it was just interesting to me because, you know, I'm listening to pundits talk about Brett Favre breaking records, you know, Peyton Manning chasing records, and they all chasing Fran Tarkenton's records. So I'm like, who the hell is Fran Tarkenton? And why does this cat got all the records? You know, so I looked him up, man. I looked him up, and I'm like, why does nobody ever talk about this dude? You know, he's got all the records.
And that's the other thing, you know, I mean, if you want to talk about evolution, if you ever seen Fran Tarkenton, he had one bar across his face, you know. These cats, they got helmets
right
on there look like a small car, you know. They got airbags in them. They got all the bells and whistles. They got the sideline, you know. I'm telling you, Fran Tarkenton probably called 99% of his plays. You know, think about that. Think about what football has come to. You know, now you got a quarterback. He got a speaker in his ear. You know, they're telling him the plays. He's going with statistics. They got computer analysis. Fran Tarkenton can get out there and make a bad call. He ran his ass off. He's traveling. He's making shit happen. You know.
What you say? He hiked the ball. Bad call.
Yeah, you know, he get out there, you know.
There were some other good ones that we had that were suggested and thrown out. Phil T, you had a couple of good ones. Why don't you run through your list real quick?
All right. well, first of all, I had a bad one I had to take out. And I'll share the bad one because, you know, like Bernie Mac said, we family. We family. So initially I had Herman Moore in, but then I took him out. I took him out real fast. Okay? Yeah, I grew
right
up in Michigan.
But why take him out? Herman Moore,
because
at the time that he was playing, he caught everything that was ever thrown at him. He'd have had a hell of a lot more passes. They just had to throw it to him more, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I remember that 136 catch year he had, and I think he had 5 years over 100 catches. But, you know, thinking about this, I thought about a guy that I think was better qualified to be on this list in terms of somebody who was a superstar that we don't think about that anymore. And Herman Moore was a great player for most of the 10 years he played, but the guy I came up with that would be higher on the list is Tim Brown, Timmy Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Tim Brown played 17 years, mostly with the Raiders. Won the Heisman Trophy at Notre Dame. He's a wide receiver. Back then, he returned kicks, punts, was just exceptional. This guy was Rocket Ismail literally a few years before Rocket Ismail was Rocket Ismail. He played 17 years. He's fourth all-time in receptions right now with 1,094. He's third all-time receiving yards with just 115,000. And he scored over 100 touchdowns. I think the thing that hurts him is that he played 17 years, but he was only in the Pro Bowl 9 times. And, you know, almost more than any other sport, they may vote in 22, 24 Pro Bowlers, but, you know, by the time it's all over with, there might be 40 Pro Bowlers, the people not going because of injury. I saw this as a guy that, why don't we talk about him, you know, Chris Carter has moved beyond him, probably because Chris Carter is more visible now. But I just wanted to put it out there to the fellas. Why have we forgot about Tim Brown?
Well, I think also he played during a time when you had, Andre Reed. And we didn't even talk about Andre Reed, but he played at a time when there were a lot of great receivers at that time. And I would agree, Tim, and I think part of it was he played at a time when the Raiders were going through so much turmoil back and forth that I think people lost how good he was as a player. also at a time when there were a lot of other great teams playing at that time. So I think part of his challenge was he was playing at a time when you had a lot of these other great receivers. I think even in his own conference, you had great receivers. And then he had also, I think he lost out because I think the Raiders were going through that crazy transition where people were trying to really, at that point, realizing whether or not that Al Davis knew what he was doing. And Tim was still making plays through all that craziness.
I got an explanation. And, you know, Devon, I think yours is very strong. But I got an explanation. And I think it's fantasy football. Fantasy football is going to make us know who Andre Johnson was 20 years from now. Even if Andre Johnson pretty much has the same career as Tim Brown.
I agree. Oh, absolutely. I will not disagree with that. It's the reason that we know who Priest Holmes is. You know, it's the reason that we know who Terrell Davis is. And people will talk about Priest Holmes and Terrell Davis before they talk about Ricky Waters or Roger Craig.
Or Marcus Allen.
Yep.
Who would have been better fantasy players if fantasy were back then?
Roger Craig would have been LeSean McCoy. I mean, Roger Craig was a bad man.
Woo. Oh, yeah. He should be on the list. I don't think people understand how good. I mean, I think because of Montana and Rice, you watch those teams, Roger Craig held up early 49ers together. I mean, he could pass to him, he could run. You know, he made the fullback the fullback.
I mean,
they actually had fullbacks.
Right.
Last time you seen a fullback. Fullbacks are like phone booths.
Yes.
But again, that's that change in the game. You're going to see that. You know, you're going to see the players that are, you know, you're going to think about the relevancy of players and what you see, you know, every weekend.
So Marcus, I had a guy on my list that you also had. Why don't you break him down? Olajuwon.
Yeah, you know, Akeem was a dominant force. When you look at Akeem Olajuwon, you're talking about a dude that averaged almost 4 to 5 blocks a game during one season. Okay? Plus, he was giving you 25 and 12 rebounds. And he did this over a 10-year period. So you can look at the numbers and talk about Akeem. But what I want to get into is what Akeem actually was as a player. This was a guy who, in my opinion, took the center position to a different place. He took it to a different place, and I think he had a different skill set than we've seen at the center position in a long time. Well, this guy could shoot jumpers. You know, Pat Ewing could shoot jumpers, but Pat was a baseline jump shooter. You know, David Robinson had a jump shot, but They all evolved and developed jump shots because Akeem had one, and it made Akeem so lethal. And he brought that jump shooting aspect to the big man position. He played the big man position. He played the pivot like a guard, but he was still able to hold it down in the post. He wasn't like a Dirk, who 7 feet, he can play on the perimeter, but is not really going to kill you with his back to the basket. Akeem could take you in so many different directions. You know, he had the quickness of a guard, you know, both laterally and then vertically. He could get off the floor quicker than any player I've ever seen. You know, the only guys I can think of who got off the floor as quick as Akeem that I saw play were guys like Sean Kemp, who could get up in the air as quick as Akeem. Akeem would get up in the air so quick, and he had amazing timing. But he was, to me, in the modern era, to the pivot play, what Jordan was to perimeter play, where Jordan played both ends of the court so extremely well that we haven't seen anybody come close to that. And that's what I think, for me, that's what Akeem was. He played offense extremely well, and then he played the defensive end extremely well. And I don't know if we've seen a center since Akeem be able to dominate both ends of the court the way he did. Shaq was an amazing force offensively, but he didn't operate with the skill level that Akeem did. You know,
that's not even a slight Shaq.
That's not the slight Shaq. Shaq had a different skill set. He had a lot of skill, but his skill set was different. Shaq didn't play that deep that Akeem plays.
Yeah, I, 2 points. First of all, you broke it down like a young Hubie Brown. Okay.
Props to Hubie.
Yeah. Second of all, to you know, to Ray's point earlier, that these are guys that raise the bar. Olajuwon, he was on NBA TV. They showed a game, a playoff game, him against Seattle in the early 90s. And it was, I sat there and watched the whole game. They had it cut for 2 hours. It took me 3.5 hours to get through it because I was just rewinding. Every time he made a move, it was just so beautiful, so pretty to watch. You know, we use this term of poetry in motion, but this is what this guy was. I mean, his footwork was just...
Oh, just out of this world.
Yeah, yeah. I'll pass the baton to you, Ray, because I think you know where I'm going.
Well, you know, what you are used to seeing out of big men is that nice little drop step and turn to the basket, and they're right there, you know, and they would just finger roll it in or do whatever. What Akeem would do was get his guy 10 feet from the basket, and all of a sudden there is so much separation. He's shooting a jump shot, you know, on that baseline with nobody around him, whatsoever. And he would turn, you know, he would make that move. You know, he hooked that foot around, and all of a sudden, there's just nobody there, and teams would know that he was going to do it. They would try to double him up. He could fade away with it. He could do whatever he wanted to do with it, and it was just beautiful to watch. You know, and he just made it look so easy, and then everybody attributed to what, you know, he's 7.5 feet tall. That to me is what made it so amazing. I couldn't do it, and I'm 6 foot tall, you know. I couldn't, just as graceful as can be.
And I would say probably the telling point about it, I think up until that point, if a center ever got switched out on a smaller player, you were like, uh-oh, they're in trouble. You almost got a sense that if he got switched out on a smaller player and got out of rotation, that smaller player was in trouble. You're like, that's about to get tossed into the fourth row. It wasn't like I don't care if it was a small forward or a guard, wasn't like you had a sense that he wasn't going to be able to stay in front, which gave you another, and this is back to what I think Marcus was saying about being a player on both ends, that when you can control a game on both ends of the court, you know, in a way that can make your team competitive every night, get possessions, I mean, he did it, but just the way he did it. So, like I said, if he switched out, you didn't think he was at a disadvantage. I mean, he could be out there on Isaiah. We just talked about Isaiah. He was on Isaiah. You might think, you wondering whether or not Isaiah going to get around you. And Isaiah was quick as can be. And so that quickness in the footwork, you know, he played soccer. He did all that stuff. He brought a whole new different kind of flow to it. The dream shake still has not been replicated. You know, anybody can do a dream shake. The dream shake is still legendary, and when young people know your move, you know you something else. The dream shake was, I was trying that stuff, I almost broke my ankle on the playground. We all
dream shake is not for a novice. It's not for a novice.
That's right.
You mess around and pop your ACL trying to dream shake.
You know, and the thing about the dream shake is that it didn't even matter who was guarding him or if there was anybody guarding him. It was almost like Olajuwon when he caught the ball. Okay, I'm going to go left, right, then I'm going to shoot. And it didn't even matter what the defenders were going to do. I mean, it didn't even matter if they were there. I saw an interview of Hakeem's college coach, and I can't think of his name at Houston. And
And he said, you know, Hakeem's freshman year, it was only his first or second or third year playing organized basketball. And what he said was, I would have to talk to the officials before the game, like, listen, we got this kid, Elijah Wan. I know he's in warm-ups. You might be looking, he's just a big, tall guy. You're going to be doing some things, and you guys are going to want to call travels because you just haven't seen anybody do this kind of stuff. And, you know, he would say, like, he'd be telling the officials this, and the officials would be looking at him like, man, what kind of game are you running? And then by the third or fourth, you know, possession, Hakeem would do something, and they'd just blow the whistle. And this coach said, you know what, I kid you not, there are probably 15 times in my college career where I've seen an official blow a whistle, and it's almost like in football, they throw a flag and they take it back. And the Houston coach would say, you know what, during Hakeem's freshman year, this happened like 10 times. The referees would blow the whistle and then apologize. I mean, this is how smooth and unique this cat was.
I tell you what, Guy Lewis used to have on that crazy jacket. Five Slamma Jamma. We didn't even talk about Five Slamma Jamma. That team was so dense. But yeah, King was different. I mean, he's a game changer. And I don't think we talk about him with the level of appreciation today that we should. I don't think people talk about it like that. I mean, it's the reason
that Kobe and Dwight Howard and LeBron and these guys go to Hakeem to work on their footwork. You got 6'7" guys going to see a 7-footer to work on footwork. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That says it all.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So we're gonna wrap that up, but we had some other guys. I know I had a couple of those guys like Rod Woodson, Barry Sanders. I think T.O. is gonna fall into this category one day. And because of all of the other stuff that comes with T.O., we're gonna see him differently in 10 years. We're gonna view him differently, even though he was legitimately for most of his career one of the top two receivers in the game.
Sure.
You know, so we'll touch on that, you know, that's a conversation we could have all night. We could dedicate a whole show to that particular conversation. What I want to get to right now is we got to get into the pick six. We got about 10 minutes left in the show. So we're going to get into this week's pick six and get the picks on record. Now, I didn't have my correct set of notes from last week, so there was a little bit of a discrepancy with D. Will's picks. Let me see if I got the notes. I'm not sure if he went 4-2 or 3-3 last week. You went 4-2.
I think I
okay.
went
4-2.
But...
Okay.
I 5-1 the week before.
All right, so we'll say D. Will went 4-2. We'll say he went 4-2. He's at 35-19. Phil T is nipping on his heels though. Phil T went 5-1 last week. He's at 34-20. Ray went 4-2 last week. He's at 27-15. And then I'm bringing up the rear. I went 5-1 though, so I'm making ground. I'm starting to hit my stride. I'm at 31-23. So the standings are starting to tighten up. You know, we're trying to catch D Wills. Everybody's chasing D Wills right now. He's hanging on. So this week
I'm like Jimmy the Greek without the racial slurs. I'm just gonna be doing what I do.
wait a minute. You just don't say it. We ain't gonna talk about your fantasy football picks. Right
hey,
there.
I'm all for all love for all folks.
yeah, we ain't gonna say about your fantasy football team. We gonna keep moving.
Right. If there was some black people, he would have one. I'm telling you.
Even though I'm knocking on the door of the playoffs in two leagues now, I'm back in it.
Man, you just AC fodder, man. You're going to figure that AC to get bounced.
Just call me Tony the Rooster. Just call me Tony the Rooster.
All right, the Rooster. Here we go. All right, first game, NFL. First of the three NFL games. We got the New Orleans Saints going into Atlanta. This is a big game for both teams, interdivisional game. We got three division games this week. It's a lot of those this week. It was actually a tough week to pick three games. There are a lot of good games this week. But I picked these three because the team seems to have pretty big and close matchups. So we got New Orleans at Atlanta. I took Atlanta. DLT took Atlanta. D-Wills, weigh in, man.
And I picked New Orleans to win this division. It's at Atlanta. I'm going to go with New Orleans. Give me a chance to get back in this.
Ray, who you got?
Well, I think Mr. Ryan has found his new lollipop. I think Julio Jones, as the gentleman last week, you know, pointed out so well, Julio Jones is a brute force, and I think that.
Just point that out. Great point, Ray. Let me just point that out to our listeners out there. All right, we had our fantasy expert come on this show last week. We got it on tape, partner. It's 2011. We got this on tape. All right. Eric Hamilton came on our show on the Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio, and said, if you can, get your hands on Julio Jones. What Julio Jones go out there and do? Ball. That's all I'm saying. You get that here. You get that here.
I got to go with Atlanta.
All right. So Ray's going ATL. We got the New England Patriots, who seem to be struggling right now, going against the New York Jets, who seem to have found something that looks like a groove. I don't know if it really is a groove, but it kind of looks like one. I took the Jets. Filthy, who you taking? I mean, who'd you take, Filthy, the Jets?
Yeah, I took the Jets.
Yeah, you took the Jets. Ray, who you taking?
What? Who the Jets player?
New England at the Jets.
Oh, I think New England is suffering a little bit. I'm going to take the Jets. I think somebody at Rex Ryan's house got their shoes off.
All right. Devon, you going to go against the grain on this one?
I'm going with the Jets.
Uh-huh.
New England's defense is terrible, and people are seeing to figure out they can't beat you vertically. And
is Brady still the best quarterback in the league? Is Brady still the best quarterback in the league?
I'm not sure, but you were right.
That took too long. The answer is no. He's number two now. Rodgers is number one. I don't care what you say. If you watch the football games, Rodgers is number one.
Where's Eli Manning at?
Man, Eli Manning is outside. He on the outside looking in, but he's still ahead of Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, I would say for this season, that's
true. You standing on Phillip Rivers' head.
Phillip was getting a good game last week and then threw some pick sixes. I'm like,
We'll see how that one plays out. We're gonna have this Eli.
He still scored 30 points. So L Dog, I know you're listening. We were talking at Chuck. I told you he's gonna score an average of over 20 points over the next four games. I know you listed, so you should send me something, send me a text or something to that. Because he's up there telling me I wasn't right. He scored 30 points last week. That's all I'm worried about.
All right, here we go. Last NFL game. The Pittsburgh Steelers, the Steel Curtain, is going into Cincinnati to face Andy Dalton, potential rookie of the year, Andy Dalton. Now, before we get into the picks on this one, I'm just going to throw something out there. We're real pressed for time, so just give me your quick off-the-top answer. Pick one of the three, Andy Dalton, Andrew Luck, Cam Newton.
Cam Newton.
D. Will's going Cam Newton. Phil T.
For what? Just that's
your quarterback. Your quarterback. Next 10 years.
I'm rolling with Cam Newton based on what I've seen so far. I'm going to go with
Cam Newton.
A bird in the hand rather than two in the bush.
I'll go with Cam Newton. I'll go Cam Newton as well.
Yeah, I got to go Cam too. I like Andy Dalton. I think Andy Dalton's going to be a great quarterback. He's doing a lot with a little. But Cam's upside is crazy.
I hope you played an early taste where I was like the only one out there yelling at the cat before the season. I hope you played some of that, drop some of that stuff.
Nah, you were. Like at the time, like I said, with my critique of Cam had nothing to do with his actual play on the field. It was more about his personality makeup. That's what I wasn't sure about, and that's what I had question marks about. And I'll admit, he's proving me wrong. He's showing that he's got it, and he's getting it, and he's learning, and he's going. And I like that because I got him on my fantasy team. Give me that money. All right, so Pittsburgh at Cincinnati. I went Pittsburgh. Phil T went Cincinnati. Devon.
I'm going to the Steelers. I haven't gone against Steelers all year. But I'm going to the Steelers. This
right, you know you never pick against the Steelers.
I was actually going to pick against them last week. I should have.
Who you got, Cincinnati or Pittsburgh?
I'll go Pittsburgh.
All right. Pittsburgh on the road, bounce back win. All right, NCAA football game. Nebraska at Penn State. I win Nebraska, Phil T win Nebraska. D. Wills, we're going to go with Ray to start this. Ray, who you taking?
Give me Penn State at home.
Okay.
Give me Penn State at home.
With all this distraction? I say with all the distraction?
Oh, sure. So Joe ain't been coaching since the 70s. Shit, ain't nobody on the team even know who he is.
What you say, Joe? Like, man, I ain't know you're touching boys at the facilities. I ain't even been to facilities in 30 years.
Yeah.
Joe said they got automatic doors over there. I don't even know how those work.
You know when they roll up Penn State, if they roll up in Wisconsin, they go have little boys and makeup and shit. They go still play that.
Oh, man. All right, D-Wills, who you talking?
I think the young men from Penn State are going to rally. This is what they do, young folks up against the world. I mean, Penn State, Nebraska still can't throw the ball. And on
man,
the road,
them kids ain't talking about no us against the world, man. They like, man, this is crazy. I ain't signed up for this. I guarantee that's what they said in that locker room.
But they know they're 8-1. They got a chance to make something happen. They're going to figure it out.
Yeah, Nebraska's going to clip them. Oregon at Stanford. I took Oregon. Phil T, who'd you take in this one?
Oregon.
D. Wills.
Everyone's taking Oregon. Speed's going to take Stanford out. I'm going Stanford.
Ooh, Stanford. Ray, who you taking? Stanford's at home.
I think everybody taking Oregon for a reason. So I'm taking Oregon, too.
All right. Now, we got Auburn at Georgia. I went to Georgia at home. Phil T went to Dogs at home. Ray, who you taking?
That's when I'll gamble with. I'll take Auburn.
Auburn on the road.
Yeah.
D. Wills, who you taking?
I'm going to go with Georgia. I thought Rick was going to be run out the gate and everything else. I'm going to take Georgia at home. They salvaged him this season.
All right. So, that's the pick six for this week. We got about a minute left. I'm going to throw on some music. And we're going to wrap this show up. Been another great week. Thank you for joining the Real Sports Guys. Real Guys Talk Real Sports. Renegade Radio.
I got a dog of the week.
Drop it.
Yeah. Hey, my dog of the week, I had two, but I'm going to kick it to one. My nephew at Yale, Jay Conway, is back against Brown. Yeah.
Props.
Well, my dog of the week is I'm going to think it's because he bounced back after being brutalized with 10 people to somehow help his team win. And for everybody at a tough game in Oakland, I go with them.
Hey, and if you haven't caught on yet, you know, they got the new T-Bowing phenomenon. It's replacing planking as a new thing to do, the new stupid thing to do. T-Bowing. You get down on one knee and pretend you're praying. they got babies doing it, dogs, cats, you know, people doing it in the grocery store, people people doing it on construction sites. It's crazy, man. It's new. It's a new stupid thing to do. T-boning.
Anything to get y'all closer to the Lord. So many folks need to be close.
So we off the air. Yeah, man. I don't know about that Penn State game, man. I think them young boys in the locker room gonna be like, man, this ain't got nothing to do with us.
Right.
I mean, usually guys rally when it's like, okay, you know, people from the outside is coming at us. I think a lot of guys in the locker room, man, is like, man, for real? That's what happened?
That's the thing. You know, you can't touch this. You can't touch this. If you're at Penn State and your name ain't being brought up, you ain't saying nothing. You know? You're messing with little boys? Come on, man. You don't touch it. You just go out there and play your game and get focused. And, you know, I bet you watch on the sideline, ain't going to be nobody 3 feet from Joe Paterno except another coach. You know, they don't want to be on TV with him. They don't want to be shown with him. You know.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I hope somebody don't mess up and Twitter something. You know, I mean, it's just a topic you just need to stay away from if you're at Penn State.
Now you got to let this roll out, and then if you're Penn State, you crack every skull that's involved. You crack every skull that's involved. If Joe hesitated, if Joe blinked on this, it's like, Joe, grab your walker, get your old ass out of here. You know?
He got some new tennis balls. We put them on the end of it.
Yeah.
Right out.
That's just devastating, you know. This cat is on your. You walked in on this cat in your shower.
What'd you say? Walked in, walked out, as you were.
Yeah.
My fault.
You know, and the only thing, you know, Joe probably can't see that far. You know. he was in there watching his dog. You know. He didn't know. His old ass. He can't see that far.
Right.
It's not an excuse. I'm not saying it as an excuse, but you know, Joe probably looked at, you know, he probably didn't see it. You know, if somebody told him, you know.
You say Joe Pop walked in and said, "What the fuck is that? Is that you, Sandusky?
You know
what you doing there?"
Right, Sandy.
He said his glasses got all fogged up.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking, if they were more than 15 feet away, shit, Joe ain't see that shit.
Wait, why you going there? Wait a second. He's seen him, but he didn't see him.
That's what Paterno was saying in his press conference. Man, I couldn't see it.
You know, if
all I heard was Sandusky's voice,
I
man.
Forgot, I didn't hear it. Old ass Joe, he's been wearing them same ass glasses since the 50s. He ain't got another prescription.
Stop, right there. Stop.
I didn't see it.
They said he seen him, but he didn't really see it.
Shit. You know, I went in there.
Oh,
all he seen was like two little blurs. You know when you wake up in the morning, you don't, you know, you open your eyes, you don't see nothing.
You're on fire.
I can't get 85. You understand when you're 85. I'm 50. I can't see shit now. I'm serious. It ain't funny. I just drove home from Fort Atkinson. If it wasn't for the streetlights, I'd have hit shit everywhere. You lose your sight, you just lose it. I mean, I'm not putting it out there as an excuse. If Joe knew about it, if somebody came back later and said, Joe, didn't you see that? And you would say, hell no, I didn't see it. What was going on?
That
was Sandusky in there with a little boy. Oh, hell, Joe should have ran in there, grabbed that cane, and beat his ass down. He didn't see it.
What you say? Somebody asked Joe if he saw that. He looked at him with the big ass glasses, his eyes all big and the lenses and shit.
You look at
the
fuck you think? Remember Red Fox and Harlem Nights when they got him them big ass glasses?
Hell yeah.
That's Joe.
Oh, you are Joe. Pinky toe.
Oh man.
Yeah. You blind motherfucker. You blind motherfucker.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Say, I ain't finding it out there for an excuse. I'm just, you know. And then again, you know, you gotta crack every skull involved in that.
Yeah, man, that's not a good look right there, man.
They gonna clean house. With the next 7 to 10 days, they cleaning the house. You can't get back from this. This is worse than Ohio State by far. And Ohio State had to clean.
Oh yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah,
so.
this ain't even NCAA stuff. This is prosecutor. You walk in and Penn State has to distance themselves from every bit of it. And if that means letting old Joe's ass go, and there's no way he should be standing on the sideline this weekend. No way. But at the same time, if that sheriff, whoever's saying that Joe didn't do, you know, he didn't go far enough or he didn't turn it in quick enough or whatever, if they should find that his ass is lying, you can bet in Pennsylvania, they'll rack his ass up.
Well, did you hear about?
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about this. Did you hear about the prosecutor who
they
called about it, went missing? Yeah, they disappeared. Went missing. They said, what's it been since 2000? What was that? 4?
2007. They don't play that shit in Western PA, man.
No,
that's gangster stuff. That's
what
city of Compton.
Hey, Joe Paterno, Italian.
So
right.
when they had a case where they heard Sandusky on the phone. So the mother of one of the alleged victims, we can say at this point, I think that was a victim, had him on the phone and he apologized. He said he said something to the effect that he shouldn't be alive. And so there was a detective that was sitting in the other room on the line listening to this. And then they called the district attorney, and then he said that, and this is a guy that really didn't have a lot to do with university, had not been the gang. They said he's a pretty straightforward guy, decided not to prosecute, and then now he's gone missing. They found his car, but they haven't found him.
That motherfucker taking a dirt nap.
I mean, that's some Jimmy Hoffa type stuff.
Yeah, he's sleeping with the fish. They dropped his ass in a coal mine somewhere.
Was it 2007? 2007?
Yeah, 2007.
2007. He's been missing.
That's going on 5 years.
Damn.
When you try to protect the brand, that's the kind of stuff. That's the kind of stuff that used to happen in the South. You try to protect the brand. You know,
that's
you try to protect.
Happening in Romania,
Brian,
Croatia.
Yeah.
That's some old Gaddafi shit.
This used to be outside the lines type stuff. This is 30 for 30. I'm like, you know, this one right here.
This ain't even a 30 for 30. It's some Dateline shit.
they need to get
Dateline.
They said,
at the damn football game.
Yeah.
Mr. Sandusky, put the playbook down. I want to talk to you for a minute.
I mean, when this goes, this is gone. Yeah, you're right. This is gone. They said when this is on Good Morning America, when this hit those kind of shows, that's when you, as a university, you need to start. Now you got the casual person
involved in. This ain't just on ESPN or on these other things.
Right.
This is now hit mainstream media. That's when people really got to start making some decisions. And so this is gonna be. I mean, you don't wish this on anyone, on any family, but this is crazy. I mean, I can't even read. The grand jury testimony. I don't even want to read that stuff.
Yeah, I'm good on all that, but this ain't looking good for Penn State.
And the season when they're 8-1, it's like wow. But you know, it all comes home when you try to hold a guy up when he's 80. Nothing good can happen. That's like going out at 2 o'clock in the morning. They say nothing good can happen. Nothing good can happen.
And open my leg in the hospital.
That good can happen when you got a coach coaching after he's 65. Now, something loose is going on. You can't keep your eye on this. This is a young person's game. There's so much happening in this business. You got to have somebody on top of it at all times. And if you got to be in bed by 7 because you're tired, you can't be on all time. Ain't no 85-year-old staying up past midnight like Nick Saban. It's just not happening.
it ain't going down like that.
If you got to go down after the 7 o'clock news, then that you can't do this. If you get tired of the sidelines on a night game, you know he up in the booth looking at like, damn. You know he got some big glasses on. You don't know if he's asleep or not. You just it's a night game. We all worried. We're like, we just can't have a camera.
And the glass is big as fuck, man. Like they couldn't find him no contacts or nothing, man.
It's so big. You think that instead of like seeing into the future, you think that he's seeing inside of you. Like you see my thoughts. He sees a big bubble with words above their heads. Like I can see. I don't know.
Oh man!
Hey, I'll be cracking up about that. I'm still cracking on Ray. He said he could see him, but he really couldn't see him.
Hey, you got an uncle or a grandfather. You know, he looking one way, but he's seeing another. You know, he ain't. You know, he's getting around by memory.
Like Devon was saying, when cats get a certain age, like, you're not as fast on your toes as you was. And people know that. So they try to pull shit on you.
Right.
You know, they try to put one over on you. And, you know, I'm sure the players is like, man, glad they found out this shit and not about us getting his money.
But you think about it, when the time this stuff allegedly started, when he was notified, I mean, he already should have been retired. I mean, he's been to 85, so that was, you know, 75, probably 72 years old, right? So he should have been retired at least 10 years by then. So that's what you allow to happen when you allowed him to take over the program rather than you making a business decision about where the next phase of the program.
To me, this goes back to the fact that there's no governing body. There's nobody to come in and say, look, now, this y'all effed up, y'all fucked up, and y'all got to fix this now. You know what I mean? Ain't no Goodell, ain't no David Stern calling these cats in like, hey, you need to come see me today.
That's it. You know, if them Penn State players, it's like the shoebox, you know. If them Penn State players would have taken a nickel, you know, from somewhere else, the NCAA would be all over.
Yeah.
You know, they'd be all over. Oh, it's bad for the game. The integrity of the game is at jeopardy. But you know, apparently they don't look into the right shit.
Because everything in the rule book is somewhat meant to govern around the players, not to govern around the coaches.
Right.
Less than the act for the players. So all this other stuff is not part of what they see as their – and where are the presidents? Where are the board of trustees? Where are all these people? excitement in the game. And if you Florida State, aren't you glad you went through what you went through? Yeah, everybody got mad at Florida. Let Bobby go too quick, all this stuff. Florida State over there like, see, I told you.
That's been us. That's been us.
It's like we glad we did what we did. You know, everybody was talking about poor Bobby Bob. Shoot. You know, like your boy on the wire, like my boy, she. They over there like so happy they did what they did because, you know, you need somebody who's going to be under control of that program and can run with them young folks and can be on it. And what about these young coaches, they're more business-minded in a sense because it's about survival of the fittest. If they got to throw one of their defensive coordinators on the bus, they throwing them out.
Bus coming 15 minutes. Bus running 15 minutes. I will throw you under it.
That's the young coaches right now. You know, if they ever said that's the DNA thing, they throwing them straight under the bus. Like, you know, you got to tell me, like, get them out. I'm telling. Because that's just how they're going to do it.
But,
I'm telling.
But that's the thing, you know. You have to wonder if it happened at Penn State, you know, could it happen somewhere else? I mean, this is.
Oh.
You look at it.
It could be happening everywhere. Anytime there's camps for young people. You know.
I mean, how would you have reacted, you know, when it happened? If Joe P. would have called a press conference and just called his boy to the floor, you know. Calling the press conference today, let you know my defensive coordinator was in the locker room with a little boy, and they have you know.
And that motherfucker's fired, and I'm firing him right now
in
front of all you guys.
I got
the police waiting on him in case he want to run. Chris Hansen's here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
All I've done for you, and I've got to turn my back on you.
That's what he should have done. He should have called a press conference
and
had Chris Hansen come out. Can I talk to you for a minute, Coach Sandusky? Why don't you come on over here? What are you doing with that little boy? Why are you bringing a little boy to practice? Huh? Why you got a six pack of a Red Bull and Jack Daniels? What you gonna do with that?
You know, that's it. What do you think about all the coaches that have been through there? You know, how does this reflect on Caldwell? How does this, you know? How does this reflect?
Because they all gonna have questions. You know, they all gonna ask.
That's right.
They gonna ask Caldwell.
Yeah.
Yeah. They gonna ask all the former. They already asking all the former players. I mean, they got guys.
Right.
I forgot played for Penn State. They had them on the air today. I'm like, damn, Scott, you played for Penn State.
But again, I can't imagine. I love you guys. But if I ever walked into a locker room and seen you with a little boy, I would beat any one of you down right there.
Oh, hell yeah.
You have to call the police just to get me off you, you know. I ain't worrying about the program. I'm not worrying about my reputation. I'm not worrying about, you know. You know, I'm going to beat you so bad, you go tell on yourself. You know what I'm saying? when the cops show up, they go like, why did we lose his mind? I was in there with a little boy. I got to tell you that because if I don't tell you that, he's going to beat me down some more, you know. That's what I don't get. That's what I don't get. That's what will never sit right with me in this situation, you know.
Well, I mean,
like the,
yeah.
You know, all the allegations with Michael Jackson, you know. All them parents that sent their kids to Never Never Land after the first time. I don't get that. I don't understand that. You know? I don't, you know, if my son or daughter was the last child on earth, and Michael said, here, you know, come play with the monkey, fuck you. You know, I ain't going there. You know, I know you got giraffes and all kinds of shit, but my kids ain't going there.
I'm trying to see that shit at the zoo.
That's right. You know,
gotta hang out with your
the allegations are true. I don't get it. You know, I don't get it.
Yeah,
they just Yeah, the trustees just launched an investigation, so it's just now. So,
yeah.
So they, it's coming to an end. They, well, so they allow the investigation. He might not see the field by Saturday. Too many days.
Right.
The board statement, we are committed to restoring public trust in the university. Now, the board said this. The president didn't say anything. See, now the board had to come out and say what the president should have said.
That's right. But there again lies the problem. You know at Penn State that Joe Paterno got more say than the president. You know that.
And that's what I'm saying. Where does higher education come when that happens? And one of these presidents not to step up and just take the heat. Now they got some ammunition. You know, the next president should be a step up and say, okay, do we want to know Joe Paterno? Do we want to know what you want? Are you going to be the one standing in front of the mic? Some of these presidents have got to figure this out at some point. Because we've gotten to the point where this is just out of control right now. Where you got to, at some point, understand that higher education has a role. And it's not this. This can't be, you can't be expecting this to, this can't be the place for it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, now you got the board, you got the regents doing what the president should have done. So you know the president's gone.
Right.
But he was there for what, about 10 years? So you know he gone. It's, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the thing I don't get, though. I mean, that's the thing I don't get. So you got this huge university with thousands of employees, and so this high-profile one screws up, an assistant coach. I don't get why the president gets fired, even though people underneath him, it's their job to take care of this kind of stuff. And oftentimes the president may not even know about it. I mean, that's why I don't...
Read your Blood magazine in the next couple of weeks.
What do you say?
Yeah, read the Bullet magazine in the next couple of weeks.
President would have came out as soon as this story broke and suspended Joe Paterno and anyone that could have been involved in this situation. If this president would have stepped forward immediately, and to me that would have been the right thing to do, and just said, look, all of these players are going home until we get this straightened out. Nobody in the country would have said a word. Nobody in the country, except for those Penn State faithful that think, okay, well, if they're not involved, then we lose this standing. We're 8-1, blah, blah, blah. But anyone else would just say that's the right thing to do. This is too hot, too volatile to stutter step and to have anyone second guessing your motives for not saying shit. You know, that president should have been down at the athletic department going, "Look, Joe, look at me, motherfucker. motherfucker." Joe, go home. Home, Joe. They go drive you home.
What?
We got to figure this shit out.
The phone.
No, not the phone, Joe. We're taking you home.
What? We got a game.
Practice is over, Joe. You ain't having practice today. No.
And
the part that we have to pay attention to is that this guy was their version of Jimbo Fisher, and they told him he wasn't going to be heir apparent. Something happened, right?
Sure.
So he was Jimbo Fisher to Bobby Bowden, right? And then
right.
In 99, after Todd McCain, he said one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, he retires at 55. Something's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, that's where the problem is. And for folks who have, you know, not everybody, they got the governor. The governor is supposed to be at the meeting on Friday where they appoint the committee. Somebody gone. When the governor got to come to the meeting, somebody gone.
Shit.
Yeah, a couple people getting fired.
Yeah. This
a couple people
this
walking out of that meeting with no job.
This is clean house. They basically have said there's nobody controlling the institution. We got to take over.
Yeah.
That ooh. Boy, we're going to have a lot to talk about next week.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know what to say. We need a beat reporter. We need some somebody on the show to help us walk.
Yeah, I'm having one of them Joe Paterno moments right now, man. I just sat. Stood out of my car and dropped my glasses. I can't see shit. Can't find my glasses. Afraid to take a step. Don't want to hear that crack.
Right.
Oh, hell.
I'm looking at picture of Joe right now. Those are some big glasses. I mean,
right.
Yeah, man. Joe's glasses are on the thick side. You know,
I
got to
say, I think the reason why he's winning because he can read lips with those glasses. I think he knows what they're calling.
Well, you say he could decipher that damn code on them cars that Oregon be holding up.
They're running a waggle left. They're running a waggle left. I'm on the car. They're calling the waggle.
But you say that's why he like being up in the booth.
My goodness. Yeah, he's Oh, they said hundreds of fans staged a rally outside Paterno's home.
Ask him to do what? Leave or stay?
Well, he basically came out and said thank you to him. He said, "I live for this place. I live for the people like you guys and girls." I tell you, as he returned, he was yelling, "We are Penn State." Woo, this is going to be something else, man. That scene on Saturday, man. As I
it's going to be a circus.
It's higher education on trial right now, boy. What do we stand for? I've been saying that lately. We don't stand for diversity. We don't stand for a whole bunch of stuff in America, boy. We just, whoever runs and runs, higher education has got to take a stand on something. And this is just one more thing where people are just.
Are they taking a stand? They're standing on a pile of one. They stand on a pile of money. That's what they're standing on.
They're standing on. My goodness. I mean, lost our way. Man, well.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, this was a classic.
Yeah, it was.
We came in a little, we didn't even get a chance to say anything about Joe Frazier. Oh,
yeah.
We got to speak on him next week. We did all this is what it took. I meant to say it. We didn't get a chance to get to Joe Frazier, which we we definitely got to say something next week.
Yeah, if we
can say that even after Pacquiao fights this weekend, right? So we'll be able to talk a little bit about Pacquiao fight. We talk about what Frazier, man, because I'll probably do something for Frazier at Pacquiao's fight. That'll give us a chance to even talk about Frazier.
Yeah.
You know, because I got a little thing about Frazier in terms of, you know, just as the Wisconsin player said on the depth chart, ordinary man doing extraordinary things. He just brought his lunch pail every day and represented Philly. Philly is like Pennsylvania is for quarterbacks. Philly is itself as a city is for boxers. And he was the king sitting on top of that that city in terms of boxing. So we got to definitely talk about Smoking Joe.
Yeah.
So.
All right, fellas, I got to run.
All right, man, you found your glasses?
I'm a glasses.
He all up in the hedges right now, feet all in the mud, walking out towards the mailbox. All right, y'all.
All right,
take care, fellas.
All right.
Bye.